Townsville really is a great centre for STEM. There's a lot of national and internationally recognised STEM organisations based in Townsville and North Queensland. Yet there's not really an organisation that brings them together in order to be able to celebrate, communicate and inform and engage the community about those things. So I sort of started to talk about the idea of, well, we should have this Townsville STEM Hub, and I actually called it the Brain STEM to begin with.
And it's from that frame of mind that Sarah Chapman went about setting up Townsville STEM Hub. Seriously, today we're going to hear from a highly passionate and motivated educator who's making big waves right across Queensland and beyond.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsome.
Yes, welcome again to another Physics Ed podcast. Hey, it's a really big week this week because Sarah Chapman's involved. Now, you may have run into Sarah Chapman on Twitter because she seriously has some credentials when it comes to science education. Seriously, she's been involved with the Science Teachers Association of Queensland. She's on the Expert Advisory Board for Women in Science Australia. She's the founder of the Townsville Science Hub, and she's a head science teacher as well. Seriously, Sarah is a very, very busy person. And in amongst that, she also got to travel overseas on a Barbara Cale Fellowship. So you're going to find out lots about where she's coming from when it comes to STEM and what really drives her. So let's dive on right into this interview. I know you're going to have a bit of fun with this.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast.
I'm a head of department of science at Townsville State High School. I'm a high school teacher specialising in senior biology and chemistry, and I also teach junior science. Within our program, we have an integrated STEM program in our junior units as well. And I guess some other bits to me, I did a science degree with honours before I was a teacher and worked a little bit in research and science communication and event management. I've worked a lot in the community and have had some acknowledgements along the way for my work, which has been very lovely. And I'm a strong advocate for promoting girls in STEM and are involved in a range of organisations as a volunteer on their executive to advise on STEM education. For example, Women in STEM Australia and the Australian Girls Esteem Collaborative, as well as Science Teachers Association of Queensland. And it's really enjoyable to contribute to those organisations, but also within my local community, which is Townsville and also region-wide in North Queensland.
I sometimes wonder, I was sitting here with a bit of a smile, sort of thinking, the number of times I chat with people and I wonder, like, they wear all these different hats. I mean, where do you store these hats? Let alone, let alone actually wearing them at the right appropriate time.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. And that's all. And a lot of that's all happening almost at once, because I know that you're involved with the Women in Science Australia and the Townsville Science Hub and all this stuff literally at the same time, as well as being involved at your own school. I mean, obviously we go down the rabbit hole of just time, but geez, where did this all begin, I guess?
In some ways, I don't know. I love inspiring people and the community as well as kids with science, and I think it's a passion. It's not just a job, and so doing what I do, you don't mind putting in the extra hours and collaborating with other people. Probably a pinnacle moment was being nominated for and winning the Prime Minister's Prize in 2013.
Yeah, well done. And, that's awesome.
Oh, thank you. that platform really, I guess, inspired me to step up and utilise that opportunity to be a voice for the profession, but also to try and drive opportunities for the young people in my region, because a lot of times regional areas are forgotten, as well as I guess being an advocate for girls in STEM, which is something I'm passionate about as well. And so I guess all of those hats and juggling those balls in the air it means being involved in different organisations and running things yourself in order to try and, I guess, fulfil those passions, I guess. And, it requires a lot of time, but the worth in terms of what benefit other people receive from my efforts and from working with others is extraordinary and certainly worth it.
Absolutely. I mean, if you love it, you don't really watch the clock, do you?
No.
You're totally involved in it. And actually, I just always wonder, I mean, obviously people who are doing this, they do it for a passion, for a reason. And I kind of wonder, where did this stem from in terms of, is this something that you thought, while you were in high school, I want to be going into this area, or did it start earlier than that? Like, when did you go, you know what, science is for me?
Well, it was actually my year 8 science teacher. He acknowledged that I was really good at science and thinking scientifically. My parents wouldn't have agreed because I used to just question everything and drive them nuts. But then when I put a name on it and that it was called science, which I found out at high school, it kind of all made sense. And I think from there, my passion for science grew because I was able to question things and test things. And I think that continual sense of wonder and exploration, which in some ways is being a big kid, but learning about the world that you live in, really is an extraordinary thing. And I think science, in terms of being able to continuously be explored and learnt about, is just such a fascinating thing, and to me it just, it's the best.
I mean, someone once described to me that science in a lot of ways is big kids playing.
Yes.
The thing is, the reality is little kids can be doing exactly the same thing, right?
Absolutely. We're born scientists, really. We're pretty good at it when we're children. I think we forget to question as we get older. So I think maintaining that sense of wonder, like people like Sir David Attenborough, who do that very well. I think the world that we live in, there are so many extraordinary things that science just enables us to learn about them and know more. And with technology developing and people being able to collaborate across the world, we get to learn more and more, and that just makes everything even more extraordinary.
So how do you develop, like, you've got a whole bunch of students in your high school, let alone all the other stuff that you do. How do you continually work on and develop kids' own mindsets in questioning the world that they live in? Like, I mean, some do it naturally, but I kind of wonder about others. I mean, how do you do that with the cohort that comes through your years every single year?
A lot of times it's reminding them how to be big kids and finding those carrots, I guess, or the things that intrigue them that they want to know more. A lot of times that will be something that perplexes them and they're questioning and say, how did that happen? Or a lot of times it's doing simple experiments and then it's saying, well, if you had to change that or if you had to explain that, how would you? I really like incorporating everyday things because a lot of times students don't necessarily think there's science involved. So it's nice to look at the everyday and then say, well, did you know that this is the science there or this is the science behind a particular thing? And so that enables them, when they're an expert in that everyday thing, to then link the science in it, which generally students like, because they can go home and say, did you know that this certain thing has science within it?
Absolutely. But, I mean, you see a lot of even like the kitchen chemistry books and those sort of things made for primary school, and of which, you know, can be embellished for high school and beyond. I mean, the idea that there is science around us, I mean, it's often just said to, but the reality is, funnily enough, it's actually quite true. I kind of wonder, I mean, knowing that, you know, obviously you do a lot of experiments for your own faculty and everything else. Yeah. I mean, if you were, I don't know, given half an hour to quickly just whip into the lab, grab some stuff, to show, I know, year 8 group. I mean, what's your favourite go-to experiments that help kids understand that exactly that science is everywhere. It's in everyday stuff. I don't need a burette and beakers and Bunsen burners.
Well, probably one of my go-to ones, which I guess I've shared with a lot of primary teachers, which I do use from primary school kids through to year eight, is looking at exploring the properties of materials.
Yep.
And so generally in a science lab, you'd be doing chemistry experiments and looking at different chemicals and exploring things like that. But we actually start with looking at lolly snakes. And most students have examined them. Most students have eaten them. So we look at something that most kids have, I guess, looked at. And we look at the elasticity of snakes and actually how brand or colour or where they're stored affects the property of that particular thing and its elasticity. And yeah. So something that is, I guess, very attractive to eat becomes, I guess, the subject of the scientific investigation. And from there you start talking about, well, what could we do in terms of a scientific sense and turn it over into, I guess, using more formal chemicals and things like that. And there's lots of examples of things that you try and incorporate that everyday, I guess, context, because students are more likely to be going, oh, well, I've used that before and I haven't seen the science in it. So it simply, I guess, puts that science into something they already know. And even taking that then up into chemistry, we look at the reaction between the salt within the solutions and the alginate, which reacts to form a gelification reaction and actually creates the jelly that you have that makes your lolly snakes. You can look at the reactions up into a chemistry level as well. So it sort of has a broad appeal along, I guess, from primary through to senior chemistry, the same sort of topic, which is pretty exciting.
Actually, those snakes are really handy just as a resource to always have on hand. I mean, I was just sitting here thinking about some of the ways we've used those particular snakes, and you know, like the really long ones, like the giant pythons, like the really big ones. You can actually use them as quite a good backbone for DNA. And I agree with the elasticity totally. I'm guessing that the whole cold versus hot would kind of make a difference on elasticity.
And if you heat it too much.
Well, especially the ones I find in my back seat of my car because I have young kids. Well, you find more about elasticity, you find about how well it gels to other things.
Yes.
It's good fun. So, I mean, so wind it forward to the present. You're involved in a whole bunch of different boards and bits and pieces. I mean, you're highly passionate about, you know, getting girls into STEM and in general. I mean, what sort of projects, workshops, things like that Women in Science Australia do?
Women in Science or Women in STEM Australia have a symposium that's every 2 years, and their symposium is coming up this year in July. And that's, I think, a really good melting pot to bring people together to talk about particular issues in engaging girls in STEM and engaging girls with mentors. It's also a great place to inspire young people, so actually allowing them to come along to parts of the symposium and hear inspiring talks in order to build their aspirational connections. So that symposium is a really good, I guess, event to bring people together. But in terms of, I guess, the everyday, women in STEM are very good at advocating for girls in STEM as well as women in STEM and connecting people with relevant resources and information in order to take back to their workplace or school, which is very, very useful in this day and age that you don't need a particular place or space. It's about connecting people so they can utilise the information that they need to be able to, I guess, do their job properly and make sure girls are very well informed and also their parents and guardians too.
That's fantastic, and actually reminds me of a chat I had only last week with Alex Harrington out of the Warren Centre in the University of Sydney. They're working on Inclusion Squared, which is looking at that trajectory pathway that
girls becoming early career scientists and then beyond, how they get mentored into basically being STEM entrepreneurs is very powerful. And knowing that it is a path that has been trodden by others is usually the first step.
Yeah, yep, that's great.
Oh, it's fantastic. And I mean, I kind of wonder, I mean, there's that part, but there's also the broader picture where you're involved with Inspiring Australia and helping out with the Townsville STEM Hubs. What's all that about?
Well, that, I guess, was a bit of my passion project that started from the Prime Minister's prizes. Basically, when I went to Canberra, I spoke to every politician that I could manage about the fact that Townsville really is a great centre for STEM. There's a lot of national and internationally recognised STEM organisations based in Townsville and North Queensland, yet there's not really an organisation that brings them together in order to be able to celebrate, communicate and inform and engage the community about those things. So I sort of started to talk about the idea of, well, we should have this Townsville STEM Hub, and I actually called it the Brain STEM to begin with. And then I wrote to the likes of people like Alan Finkel, Ian Chubb, pitching my idea, Graham Durant from Questacon, and asking them their advice about this idea. And a lot of them said, oh, Sarah, you know, that's a massive thing. I'm not sure how you're going to pull it off, but maybe start with trying to get some like-minded people and things like that. So in 2014, I started connecting with some people and met with Inspiring Australia. And through the Queensland Inspiring Australian person, which was Jane Keane at the time, we in 2015 brought together a group of STEM organisations from defence through to schools, through to government organisations, businesses and industry to say, well, we're all here, how can we make this happen? And then from there in 2016, it's grown to around 50 organisations being represented. And we had a sharing event where a range of businesses came together and organisations sharing their expertise and how we wanted to go forward. And then at the end of last year, we secured some funding from Inspiring Australia to fund some community events. So this year we've announced what those events will be, and we've got some school-based or student-based activities as well as some community activities that will occur across the year. And we've got some committees that involve all of those STEM representatives, and essentially where we're letting the strength of the community and the people speak and get together to drive this movement. And hopefully the space comes, but we, and the place comes in the long run. But the strength of people coming together has certainly started to build the knowledge and capacity of STEM in Townsville and really bring people together so we can celebrate the expertise we have here, but also provide opportunities for the young, keen, talented people that are here that are wanting to engage more, which is so very exciting.
Where can you see this going? Because I can imagine it like an inverted pyramid, just it's growing and growing and getting more and more organisations involved and events are coming on board. I mean, where do you picture this, just say like 5 years from now? I guess you could have like the blue sky version versus the realistic version. But I mean, like where could you see this going?
Well, I'm definitely a blue sky thinker, or maybe even, you know, go out into space. Let's just keep going.
Yeah, a nice sunrise, the whole thing. Fantastic, yeah.
But certainly I've spoken to a range of community organisations about the possibility of building a space that is part of some STEM developments that are occurring and being planned for in the future in Townsville. Worked with Townsville Enterprise around the development of a North Queensland STEM strategy, which is being put into motion at the moment. I've been working with them around that, and they're going to be talking with Alan Finkel around how we can implement this STEM strategy in North Queensland. And in the blue sky, I guess, feeling, I really hope that potentially we have this space. We might have a specialist school, but we have apprenticeships that are STEM-based for school leavers to be able to be upskilled in a range of STEM trades. But also we have, from the specialist STEM school, connections with universities both in Australia and overseas, where young people can really connect with experts, have mentoring, but that divide between high school and tertiary is so blurred that you kind of wonder whether there's any difference. I really think there are so many talented young people that really are looking for opportunities to extend themselves. And I think providing this space and these opportunities, I think they'll surprise me, and my blue sky might actually be exceeded. That's my dream anyway.
Yeah, that's right. You need a couple of cloud here and there, but as a whole, the sky is still there, which is fine. And the thing is, like, it's not like it's you're sort of doing this in the dark. I mean, for those people who don't know, Alan Finkel is our chief scientist of Australia, so has some form of clout to a degree. At least, even just at least helping that out to a point. I kind of wonder, you got this North Queensland STEM strategy being thrown together and lots of different ideas to meld that into reality. Is there much playing around with how that fits with the national STEM strategy? Because I must admit, I'm not really on the policy side of things. I'm more like just the people who go out and do sciencey stuff. is that something that you had to sort of be able to make fit within a national thing, or is it something very much tailored for what's going on in North Queensland?
It does reflect the national STEM strategy, but it does have, I guess, a differentiated aspect to it, in order to, I guess, meet the needs of a regional community, in order to, I guess, be specific to the industries and businesses that are located within our North Queensland region, and also the research organisations that are located here. So by all means, what we're driving is something that's informed by the bigger picture, but a lot of times, as I said before, regional areas do get a little bit left behind, and because we've had some mining downturn and I guess high unemployment rates, I really believe that STEM could be a vehicle to change our community and provide opportunities that we've not seen before. And we might actually be a place that could be an exemplar for other regions to be able to look at and be able to say, this is how we can actually upskill our young people and enable them to have that head start and connect with the broader STEM ecosystem.
What I love about what you're doing is it makes complete sense. I mean, you can have a national framework, strategy, whatever words you want to give it, but if it just sits on a website or sits in some sort of policy steering committee or document, it doesn't really do much. I mean, it's when you actually make it happen on the ground with local communities that stuff actually happens, and that's perfect. I was actually just thinking as a total side thing, which I wasn't aware of until chat was coming up, but you got luckily enough to get involved with the Barbara Carl STEM Fellowship. What's that all about?
Yes, I was very fortunate to be selected to apply for the Barbara Carl Fellowship, which was to look at best practice in engaging young people, particularly girls in STEM. A range of people across Australia were asked to apply, and I didn't kind of think I had any chance, but was very ambitious with my proposal. We had to say where we would go. So it took probably 2 months of research to put together my proposal. From that, 5 people were selected for interview and 2 people were awarded the Barbara Carl Fellowship from the Chief Executive Women and funded by the Australian Government Office for Women. And this extraordinary opportunity, I think, is still sending ripples in my world because it's just been unbelievably wonderful in terms of what it's done for me personally, but also for young girls across Australia and also internationally. I got to travel to 5 different countries, so Singapore, Finland, the United Kingdom, about 10 places in the United States, New Zealand, and 2 places in New Zealand. And I got to visit businesses, industry, schools, community groups, and fundraising organisations that engage with girls and engage with young people in STEM. And essentially those organisations, I had to research and find that they are actually very successful in this, and then go along and visit these organisations, visit the people and their, I guess, organisation, and get the history of how they developed it, how they were successful, and collect that information. I then worked with the other fellow, Dr. Rebecca Vivian from Adelaide, and we put together our research findings. She had more of an IT or computer science focus, and I went more the broader STEM focus. We put together our research, and March last year, nearly a year ago today, we launched our report called Engaging the Future of STEM. And I still need to pinch myself quite regularly to realise that I got that extraordinary opportunity, and to, you know, visit the likes of Google, the National Girls Collaborative Project in the United States, the head of Girl Scouts in the United States, going to the World Trade Center and visiting the New York Academy of Sciences, you know, going to a school in Finland and being able to watch kids learn for a day, going to a school in Singapore. All those experiences are just extraordinary. And to me, being able to give back and share that knowledge, share the report, but also speak to a range of different people from then has just been so very special. I honestly probably can't think of the appropriate words to show how grateful I am for that opportunity.
I think you've done a pretty good job. But that's fantastic. I mean, so it was March last year that report went out. And where do you send this report to? Because it could go to anyone, right? It could go to politicians or, you know, executive directors of all sorts of places. Where do you send something like that so something actually gets done based on the findings that you did?
Well, pretty much anybody that I knew, I sent it to. So I got to go to Science Meets Parliament last year, so I met a range of politicians at that event. So I personally sent them all a copy of that report. I've given a copy of the report to the Australian Chief Scientist, Alan Finkel. It's being given to like my local university, women in STEM organisations. It's been distributed on Twitter. I've given it to all of the international organisations that I visited. I've certainly distributed it in local council, state council and federal government. It's something that I guess has been shared a lot in a lot of different realms. I've shared it with my colleagues at teachers' conferences, to all of my colleagues within the state and nationally that I've met. I've shared it that way. But certainly it's not something that necessarily has an expiry date. So anybody listening, if you haven't read it, I certainly would pick it up and have a bit of a read and share it with every person that you think might appreciate it, because it can apply from anyone working in a community organisation such as a library through to schools, through to industry and businesses that engage with young people and STEM organisations. It has a lot of different applications and talks to a lot of people which I think is something quite extraordinary for one report.
Now, we will definitely put that link into the show notes for sure, without a doubt. And keep an eye on it. I mean, it'd be just pretty simple, right? If you just type in Barbara Kail Fellowship, Kail with a C-A-I-L, by the way. So Barbara Kail Fellowship, and just you'll find just articles and articles about this stuff. And actually, I guarantee there'd be someone walking the dog or driving the car going, I wonder if, should I maybe apply? I'm guessing that you're an advocate. So, I mean, what would the process be that would, you know, help them on that journey?
In terms of that, the chief executive women were the people that oversaw this fellowship. I am not aware that there is another one at the moment, so possibly it's contacting them to indicate your interest would be a place to start. There certainly is a range of different opportunities, though, something like the Engaging Science Grants that are out there at the moment. That may be a way to consider engaging in something like a STEM research fellowship. But I certainly would encourage people to do a bit of research and reading, because STEM is such an important area. And those skills can be used in pretty much any occupation. It's growing every day, so having a good knowledge of who are the front runners, what's happening locally, nationally, internationally, is a good place to start. So then if that opportunity does come up, you're well-versed to be able to speak your mind and connect with it.
Absolutely. And so I guess what we need to do is a job. We've got a job for everyone. So everyone has to, apply, knock down their doors and say, look, we really want this to happen again. It'd be awesome. But mind you, there is another one where it might actually help you out. I was lucky enough to be involved in the Churchill Fellowships. And so if it's a sort of similar traveling fellowship. It's broad, but however, if you're into STEM, and there is a likelihood that you could potentially get one. At the end of February is a closing date on the 27th of April. If you want to apply and perhaps do something that Sarah got to do as well, which is fantastic. So yeah, there's more ways to string that bow.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So look, thank you so much for getting involved with this podcast and all the stuff that you're doing up in North Queensland. I mean, I must say, as an ex-person who used to live in Rasmussen up in
Tasmania. Oh, right.
Yeah, absolutely. Generally, my dad was in the army. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, run around a little bit there. I love what you're doing up there. And, you know, it's really good for the community and, frankly, Australia as a whole and beyond, which is fantastic. What advice would you give for a brand new pre-service teacher or someone who just wants to really make STEM happen in their community? What sort of advice would you give them?
Something that I guess I started sharing with teaching colleagues last year, and this is, I guess, a bit from my experience, is teachers can see themselves in two ways. Firstly, you are a teacher in your profession, and that profession is within your school, and you have a direct influence in your classroom, in your school community, and with the parents and citizens that engage with that school. And a lot of teachers think of themselves that way, and that is their only influence. The other part of a teacher is the teacher professional outside of school. And I see myself as an educator and an educating professional that can educate people in any domain, not necessarily just within schools. As an educating professional outside your school, you can engage with the community and volunteer and educate and inspire people right where you are outside the school walls, which could benefit your class because those people might decide to return the favour for what you engage with outside your school. You might decide, oh, well, I want to expand my knowledge and read some articles. So you could become a member of your Science Teachers Association or Maths Teachers Association, depending on what STEM profession, and gain knowledge through the STEM papers and magazines and articles that come from those professional organisations. Or you could join the National Science Teachers Association of America, for example, and they send loads of emails per week about different resources and ideas. The idea of stepping outside the classroom and contributing that way reflects what you expect your students to do when they leave school, and that is to have that global perspective and be able to compete in a global STEM ecosystem. So having a knowledge of what you're trying to reflect in them and engaging yourselves a little bit broader enables people to be able to, I guess, connect with people beyond school. And that might end up being that you put your hand up to present at a conference or engage with a colleague in a different school in a different state and you share ideas and collaborate. By all means, those opportunities are endless. And I certainly, if you took me back and rewinded the clock when I started this profession, I never would have thought that I would have travelled overseas several times for my teaching profession. I never would have thought I would have spoken at international, national, state and local conferences. I never would have thought I would have done half the things that I did. So I think thinking outwardly and thinking about contributing to the community can start with just reading a journal article through to engaging with conferences or engaging with colleagues in other places and having that that willingness to share and be open, but also educate people that don't necessarily engage with schools that might rethink and want to. As the teaching profession is an extraordinary one, we get to influence people when they're making their decisions, and they are the people that go on to be our future change makers. So the best we can be and the best we can be prepared means that we're going to be inspiring them to be the best that they can, which I can't give you any better advice than that, really.
I reckon you're getting a collective applause around. At this point, which is what we need, and we need more of you, which is fantastic, and which means if we're going to create more of you, people need to get in touch with you. So how would they get in touch?
I'm in Twitterverse or Twitter at Chapman Sayre is my Twitter handle. That's probably the easiest place to find me. I'm also on LinkedIn, Sarah Chapman. Or I guess, Ben, I can give you my email address that you can put up, or I'm not sure how that works in terms of contacting, but I'm happy to connect with people, share. That's what it's all about. We're stronger together, so more than happy to connect with people.
Absolutely so. And if you're scared off by the number of hats that Sarah actually wears, she's actually quite nice.
I don't bite, I promise.
And you just want to even just engage with the report that got produced only recently, just jump on cew.org.au and just keep on looking through the content, what's been uploaded. Look for Engaging the Future of STEM and you'll be able to read to your heart's content.
Go for it. That's some other advice I'd definitely give. It's a good Easter read, I would say. It's a nice read. Not being biased that I wrote it, but I think anybody that's a STEM teacher or a STEM professional, it's a pretty enjoyable read. So I'm hoping while you're munching on an Easter egg or a hot cross bun, that might be what you're reading at the time.
Yeah, you totally can do some variable testing over the chocolate. mind you, as a total side note, but I just thought it was just the coolest thing. I took my kids to a local bakery and they're doing this thing with these Easter bunnies where they took the ears off, which is kind of violent, but this is what they did. They took off the ears and they filled it with chocolate milk. And then they put like fairy floss, so cotton candy for overseas. And they made the kids were loving drinking out of an Easter bunny. Now, if you're wondering just how messy that was, just believe we learned all about, solids turning to liquids.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it was amusing to watch. But there you go. So, yeah, go check that out. And, look, much appreciated for coming along, Sarah. No doubt we'll cross paths in some way, shape or form again.
And, yeah, I hope so.
And for now, enjoy your break coming up and we'll catch you soon.
Thanks so much for inviting me on and all the best, everyone.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech and more.
To see 100 fun free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S. And click 100 free experiments.
Well, there we go. We were speaking with Sarah Chapman, who is very clearly a highly motivated educator. And tell you what, she is a total asset for North Queensland because she's doing a lot for the local community and she's sharing it nationally and beyond. Love your work, Sarah. You're so very, very passionate. And you know that what you're doing is making a true difference. Now, some of the stuff that she was doing in the Barbara Carroll Fellowship and the Women in STEM Australia did remind me of last week's episode with Alex Harrington, who in her own right is highly motivated about STEM and really getting women into STEM. And last week, we got to hear about Inclusion Squared, which is just about doing exactly that.
That sort of business nous, you know, there's this misconception that women have poorer business nous than men. I just think that needs to be challenged. And I think the young girls, particularly, you know, through the school environment and through their networks, should be supported to understand that you can challenge those stereotypes and you can have a go at these business ideas and go and find those learning opportunities and build your knowledge about what options are available for you.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Why don't you book us for a science show or workshop in your school? We love seeing students get excited about science, and you will too. Go to physicseducation.com.au and click on schools for more info.
Yes, couldn't agree more. So it's well worth going checking out last week's episode with Alex Harrington for the Warren Centre. And you know what? While you're checking through the back catalogue, go all the way back to episode 5 where we, well, had a chat with Jackie Randalls, who is the New South Wales Inspiring Australia manager. And you can hear all about citizen science and entrepreneurial thinking in STEM. Well worth your time. But until I get to catch you next week, I hope you have a fantastic break. But we will have more still on its way. So I hope you're making your science classes awesome and everything else for the next term. And I hope you're having fun doing it at the same time. You've been hearing from me, Ben Newsom from Physics Education, and you've been listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. I'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
This podcast is part of the Australian Educators Online Network. AEON.net.au.